My name's Garrett DeCastro, owner of Premier Landscape in Portsmouth, Rhode Island. We specialize in hardscape and landscape construction, and I am a hardscaper.
So, Garrett, how did you get into hardscaping?
Mike, that's a bit of a long-winded response on my end, but I really think it's important to share my story with some guys, existing owners, and even technicians and other guys that are maybe thinking about getting or going off into their own. I started young, you know, like a lot of other guys. I was 15. My friend and I would walk up and down the street, going door to door, cutting grass, kind of same gig as everybody else started, I guess. But I really quickly kind of was drawn to, you know, how can I make this bigger? How can I make this better? I guess the business side, the entrepreneurial side. And it really became more serious when I got my driver's license. I got my first truck, first trailer, and really started kind of expanding a little bit there and doing everything from grass cutting to cleaning out basements to whatever I could almost upsell that client doing, anything that would kind of pay the bills, so to speak. My senior year in high school, 2007, we had a work release program. So I was allowed out at 10:30 every day, and my father, myself, and my principal worked a deal that as long as my father signed off on it, I could kind of do my own thing. So I kind of started my business then, senior year. I drove my truck to school and left at 10:30 and went to work. So my father co-signed my first dump truck that year. I drove it to school, drove it to parties, drove it to everywhere in between. And that was kind of my first real responsibility, truck payment, insurance, diesel fuel, the whole nine. So you know, we co-signed it to help me get going, and I took it from there. Did a first walkway and a patio project for our family accountant at the time, and that's when I really, really found out I was really interested in the construction and the hardscape end. And I quickly signed up for an ICPI certification course, took that course, and then very quickly learned I did a lot of things wrong the first time. There really wasn't a lot of online influence, YouTube and stuff around at the time. So ICPI for me was kind of my Bible. The business snowballed. I grew quick. We doubled year over year. I started diversifying into other franchises, starting and building and selling and developing. 2015, I had a lot going on. Felt like I had it all figured out, top of the world, so to speak. Brought in a bunch of managers to kind of run maintenance, run construction, run the office. And long story short, I mean, I just kind of had the wrong people in the wrong places. But most importantly, you know, they didn't have any systems. They didn't have any policies. They just kind of were put in place and hoped they could figure it out. I really didn't give them the roadmap that was in my head. 2016, we cut the company in half. You know, 2015 was rough. We almost honestly had to shut the doors. And so we pulled out of that. And 2016, cut it in half and refocused. We got rid of maintenance, focused on design build. And we've been working ever since on focusing, doing more with less. And here we are 2020, continuing to focus on that same deal. We've rebuilt to a solid core of guys. We got 3-4 crews running at all times. We do some really fun projects. We do some really cool projects. And, you know, I recently met a colleague, now I would consider him successful in the business. And he said a quote to me that really stuck, and it really just kind of rejuvenated exactly what I've been trying to do the last few years and get back on track here. Is he said, you know, my goal is for someday to come into work and for the team to send me home because I'm just getting in the way. And honestly, Mike, isn't that what we all want?
Absolutely. And there's a couple things in there that really caught my ear as you were saying that. We just had Stanley Genetic on the show, and he was talking about how he cut his company in half, and that really helped him grow his business. And we've gotten a lot of messages from people saying how interesting that was that he was talking about that and how they learned just from that short interview that we had with him. So I want to ask you, Garrett, what does it look like when you own a business and you discover that, you know what, maybe you need to start cutting your business in half or cutting people from your business? Like, how do you know that that was the solution in your business?
You know, I'll be honest. And, you know, I did listen to that interview with Stanley, and that was one that really resonated with me out of all the podcasts. And honestly, ego gets in the way. I'll be the first to admit it. I mean, we're all out there buying new equipment, building businesses, doing all kinds of cool stuff. But, you know, you lose sight a little bit, and it's tough to tell yourself that downsizing could actually be better. Doing more with less could be more profitable. And at the end of the day, that's what we're in it for. You know, we're running a business for the independents, but also to be profitable and hopefully someday either sell it or have a system that runs without you. And, you know, it's a little daunting. And for me, it was financially. I mean, I had no other option. I had to do it. I had to reorganize. I had to come to a realization that it had to be done.
Going back to the very beginning, you talked about getting into this industry in high school, and that's such an interesting program that, you know, your high school set up there for you to be able to leave in your senior year to, you know, work. Now, what was it that influenced you to get into this type of work? Like, what was that spark that made you fall in love with this industry as opposed to, you know, starting a different business or starting something else?
You know, honestly, Mike, there wasn't a specific spark. And I say that because I kind of want some other guys to resonate with that and the fact that I didn't get into it because I fell in love with landscaping right off the rip. I fell in love with business right off the rip. I fell in love with, you know, the entrepreneurial side of things. And it could have been grass cutting. It could have been tree work. It could have been building houses, anything in the contracting world. It could have gone any direction. And I think the fact that I started with grass cutting and landscaping and then had that opportunity to start getting into hardscape, that's when I really realized, not only do I like the business, but I do actually enjoy this industry. And those two paired together, you know, the sky's the limit after that.
Give us a timeline of when you started your business, and then, you know, where were your leads coming from when you first started your business? What got you that traction to kind of continue on your business?
Yeah, so I mean, we'll rewind again all the way back to 2007, senior year in high school, driving a dump truck to school and then driving off at 10:30 to go to work. It was door to door. It was boots on the ground. It was business to business. You know, I would ask clients for referrals and friends and families and walk into businesses to see if they were taking bids, cold calling, cold knocking, you know, whatever it took to get people to hear me out. And it was difficult, I'll be honest. I was, you know, 17, 18 at the time. I didn't have much experience, didn't have a fancy website with portfolios and this and that. So, you know, you got to take what you can get in the beginning. And, you know, I think Sean mentioned it, Premier Outdoor recently, that, you know, you're going to take a couple hits early on too, because you want to give the client everything. You really want to wow those first few clients, and then it snowballs from there. And you can't be afraid of the bottom dollar on every single job. So you got to be able to kind of take that with a grain of salt in the beginning. But, you know, fast forward all the way up to now, you know, that's marketing is so different compared to what it was when I started, at least. And we're getting, I would say, at least 50% of our referrals are word of mouth and repeat contractors that we've built relationships with. And the other 50% are some form of digital, whether it be social media or website presence or Google paid ads, et cetera.
Going off that, with your sales process, you know, these leads come in and somebody, you know, reaches out to you by email, by phone call, or through any of your ads or whatever it may be, they reach out to you. Where do you take that conversation from there?
Well, Mike, I'm in my office right now and I'm staring at a whiteboard, and this is the most simple system that works really well for us. And granted, you can make an Excel sheet or a Google sheet or whatever, but you know, this is a good visual in my office that myself and my manager have that we use as a talking point. But this whiteboard literally says lead, consult, design, estimate, sold, complete. So that lead comes in and we try to keep that lead as hot as possible. We sell most of our work, aside from our reputation, due to our communication. So if that lead comes in, I'm calling them, emailing them, whichever, as fast as possible. And then I want to meet with them as fast as possible. And then I want to get them through the entire process as fast as reasonably possible. So communication for us has really been our honestly our number one sales tool. I mean, we literally get jobs just for showing up to the estimate. It still amazes me. People blow off clients for a few days, and in the industry that we're in, everybody wants everything so quick. They're on their phone. They wanna talk about a patio. They're emotional at that point, ready to go, and they don't want to wait. They won't wait a week. If you can't get back to them in a day, you know, chances are they're already lined up someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. And that speed is such an important factor when you are, you know, trying to close that deal. And obviously you've put an emphasis on, you know, that communication with the customer. And I love the idea of having a visual in the office that, you know, you can also not only communicate with the customer, but you're communicating with your team. You've built the system around this, which is awesome.
Yes. One of those columns will have dates. So if the lead came in today, and I'm still staring at that lead 3 days from now, and they haven't moved over to the consult column, you know, I can hold the next guy accountable to, okay, why isn't this? Oh, well, I left a message and just waiting to hear back. Okay, fine. Or, oh, I haven't had a chance to call. Well, you know, we've already kind of lowered our chance of sale by X amount just by not getting to that person that quick. And you know, it's all within reason, right? You're going to have, you know, your consultation, you're going to have design work may take longer for one job than it will for another, et cetera. So this process is going to vary job to job, but it's just a simple, good visual thing to really hold us accountable, and it's really helped with closing.
After somebody contacts you and you talk with them, what are you doing to pre-qualify them to know that, you know, you going out there for that first consultation is not wasting your time, or not wasting your time and the customer's time? Like, what questions are you asking in that initial conversation?
Yeah, pre-qualification is crucial. You know, time is money, and your time is valuable. And I've heard it in a lot of, interviews and podcasts, everybody kind of talks about it, and it is crucial, and everybody has their different approach. For us, we're definitely starting with, you know, a phase one pre-qualification, either via email or via phone call, and that's going to be fairly preliminary. So, you know, what kind of project, what scope of work, to make sure that they're not looking for maintenance or some other work that maybe we don't do. But also the size of the job. You know, are they just looking for a front walkway, or are they looking for an outdoor living space? You know, we don't do a lot of smaller jobs anymore. We've kind of shifted our focus a little bit just with the way we're set up in our overhead. So we have, you know, other people we can refer out for that. And that's crucial to start with that preliminary. And then if they get through, you know, phase one, you know, which is usually with the office, you know, there's what I would consider a phase two pre-qualification. Now you have your sales guy, your designer, or myself, you know, in front of this client. You got a pulse on the project now. You've talked about it. Now's the time to start talking budget. Everybody hates to talk budget. No one knows what it's going to cost. Oh, you're the professional. You tell me. You have to be ready to talk budget or talk budget range, or at least be able to give them something to bite into there, so you're not wasting your time on any further design or estimating. You should be able to sit there and say, well, a kitchen's going to start at 10,000 and a fireplace is going to start at 8,000 and X amount of square feet of patio is going to start at whatever, 20,000. You know, okay, you're in the $40,000 to $60,000 range, and just wait for it. Just wait for that expression. I mean, their face says it all. You know, if they're facing you and they're good and no problem, okay. Let's talk design, let's talk estimate, and let's talk the process. But if that scares them, you know, let's try to talk some options. And then if it doesn't fit, at least you can respectfully decline without wasting any more time.
And then when you're figuring out that design process, what's going to go into their living space, or what's going to be incorporated into that design? What questions are you asking them to get to the bottom of things that, you know, that you're going to include this in the design?
Yes, I mean, that's another really important thing when you are having that consultation, to be discussing how they're going to use the space, maybe how many people they're going to be entertaining long term. I always like to ask the question, you know, do you plan on being here for a while? Do you see yourself, you know, using this space any differently in the future? In other words, maybe a pool isn't in the play right now budget wise, but are you going to want a pool in the future? You know, let's design accordingly. So again, time is money and design time is money. So, you know, ask as many questions as you can to get a good feel on what they want. And actually, Mike, I finished a consult yesterday, you know, mid-sized project. And at the end of it, he said, I might be stepping over boundaries or stepping on toes here. But I got to say, you know, I met with another contractor yesterday. And now that I just met with you, I realized he just downright didn't even listen to me. You know, I don't know what I got out of it. He came here and he sketched this and he painted this and did that. And I don't think I got a dozen words in. So I always like to listen first. You know, I know different designers have different approaches, but I like to listen first. These people live in these houses. They know how they're going to want to use the space typically. And then I'll throw my suggestions. All right, well, that's a great idea, but, you know, that might not work this way. What do you think about this? And then, you know, they're obviously asking for your professional opinion, so give them your insight and go from there. But, man, the people just, they, most of them are going to value just or respect the fact that you're going to listen to their ideas first.
Asking those questions and listening and is such an important process when you're getting to know what features are going to go into their design. And when it comes to designing, what software do you run? Do you like to use to be able to drop these designs for them?
So majority of our designs are UVision by Unilock. If we're doing 3D rendering, which most of the time we are, by far, hands down, one of the best tools we've added to the business over the last few years. Relatively low cost of entry, pretty user friendly, you know, and it's good, but it's not too good. You know, I think it was Sean actually mentioned it too, like the design world, 3D design world sometimes holds us a little too accountable for certain unrealistic finishes or design flaws in reality. So, you know, it's a great program. It's a good bang for your buck and it's pretty easy to use.
Yeah, that was an interesting point that, you know, sometimes these 3D designs these days are they look incredible and they look sometimes better than the final product, but you want that final product to look better than that design. And yeah, UVision is definitely one of the softwares that we recommend people to get into for sure. And, you know, when you're doing that first consultation, you're adding so much value into that customer's world in what they're designing and what they want to get into. So are you charging for that first consultation with them?
You know, right now we do not charge for a consultation. Consultation for now is still free.
Gotcha. And any justification as to why it's free at this point, and do you intend to maybe move to a paid model in the future?
You know, we're tossing the idea around for next year, trying it, but you know, the flip side is we do have a decent pre-qualification process, so you know, as long as we're doing our job in the office to start, we're kind of weeding out a lot of that, you know, beforehand anyway. So the better job we do at that, the better we are. You know, I think charging a small fee, whether it be $50 or $100 or whatever, but small fee really might just step us up one step closer into that pre-qualification process and really make sure by the time we show up, you know, this person is not wasting our time or their time. But again, you know, it's a debated subject. We still don't charge for it now, but we're considering it in the future.
Yeah, and it definitely my thought process as well. We don't charge a consultation fee either. And yeah, that's the same justification as I have, is that, you know, I should be doing a good job with my pre-qualification, and adding that fee would also pre-qualify a little bit further, but then it may leave a bad taste in some people's mouths. So yeah, same thought process on our end as well, which is always nice to hear somebody, you know, just getting different perspectives in the industry on that initial consultation fee and what people are doing. Now, when it comes to payment plans, you know, a customer wants to go ahead with you and they're ready to sign that contract. What do your payment plans look like with customers, and does it vary from job to job?
Yeah, payment plans will vary job to job, and most of it's going to be down to the size of the project as well as who we're working for. Most of it's pretty similar. You know, a medium or smaller project, we're doing, you know, 50% down progress payments, either weekly or biweekly, and then a balance on completion. that's kind of, 80% of it. The larger projects, obviously, someone's not going to cut you a $100,000 check for a $200,000 job, or at least a lot of people are not going to. So we might do 10 or 20% down, and then as we start completing line items or even just progress requests, we have it built in our contracts that we can bill that out up to weekly. And we'll do weekly or biweekly depending how long we're there. And then in the commercial world, we do some commercial work, a fair bit of it anyway, and we're kind of just stuck with whatever they say for payment terms. So oftentimes you're going into a couple $100,000 jobs without even a deposit, and then you're looking at 60 to 90 day terms. So to kind of play in the commercial arena, you got to have some cash on hand to be able to do that. But, we try to keep it flexible to the client, but sturdy enough behind the office so we don't get too confused with too many options.
So what do you prefer, Garrett? Do you prefer the commercial work or the residential?
Oh, I love them both. There's pros and cons to both. I love the result of the residential. I love outdoor living spaces, poolscapes, do a ton of them. I love working with clients. They appreciate you usually, that relationship. But then on the commercial side, it's black and white. You got plans, you got specs, you follow it, you get the job done, you get paid. There's no opinions. There's no, I don't like this stone here or that stone there. It's black and white. So it's a little easier. And for us, some of our commercial jobs are some of our larger projects. So we are working with some larger equipment and trucks and such. And honestly, I'm just particularly fond of that without getting fully into site construction. It kind of leaves us pretty open to do some cool stuff.
Now I want you to add value in a different way, and that's through a horror story, a bad situation that maybe you got yourself into, or even with payments, like we've been talking about payments. Any horror story that you'd want to share with us to kind of help us and our audience look at something that maybe we can implement in our business to avoid a situation like that. Do you have a bad experience on a job site or even with a payment plan that you'd want to share?
Yeah. So, without getting too detailed, in summary, I've got a ton of horror stories. This is our 13th year in business. I started it from scratch. So from no contracts to multiple page contracts to one page contracts and everything in between, every single year there's a horror story. I usually count on one. Quite frankly, I budget for one. I add a little lump sum in the budget because something's going to come up. And that could be, a contractor stiffing you for a change order that he doesn't feel as though he should pay you, to a unreasonable residential client that you just can't win with, or you just can't make happy no matter what. So, I plan for it. I budget for it. But to give an example, again, in the contracting world, change orders are a huge one. If you're not up to par on signed change orders, that's an easy way to get stiffed. And we're talking $5,000, $10,000 at a time. But in the residential world, a funny example that I can use was about a $150,000 backyard pool renovation project that went completely sideways on us, all because the U-Vision 3D design showed the pool coping when it made the radius for the pool corner. For some reason, the detail just made these zigzag joint lines. And she was expecting zigzag joint lines. And that was the beginning of what turned into a very sideways conversation. And we ended up kicked off the job, actually, because she just couldn't grasp the fact that that's not what was happening. And here's why. And this is just a rendering and et cetera. So, some other underlying factors that were going on, I guess, with the house and some other work on it. But, yeah, that was one right there. So, we walked off. We probably lost 10, 15 grand at the point of which we were at with the project and materials we had. And it's just one you got to take with a grain of salt and move on.
Yeah, that's definitely tough. And, in that situation, how do you handle something like that when if the customer wants you off the project, off the job site? Do you, Yeah, that's tough. Like, do you try to make your points, or do you just accept what the customer's saying and wish them the best and move on?
Well, I mean, that was the first and the only time I've actually legitimately been, so to speak, kicked off a project. Again, no fault of our own or anybody in the team. But, we took it for what it was. I mean, she clearly was a little unrealistic with her expectations. And, after a conversation with her on the job site, I knew it wasn't going to go anywhere. So, there wasn't any point in going any deeper and saying anything any more derogatory. At that point, she had her mind made up and, we were cleaning up and removed our equipment the same day and took what we could for materials. And that was that.
Yeah, definitely an interesting situation. Now, moving this away from that, do you have anything in your installation process, any methods, techniques, tips, anything, any tools, equipment that you live by on the job site that you would not, start a new company without?
I wouldn't be able to put my finger on any one particular item. I am a huge fan of lasers. I know a lot of guys mentioned zip levels. We have those as well. Those are great for quick, easy grade changes. But we train most of our guys on lasers so they can do their slope and carry proper slope right from subgrade to base to screed rails and everything in between. So, we do run lasers on every crew, and I think that's crucial to 80% of the work that we're doing from a small tool perspective. And I mean, from a big tool perspective, I mean, anybody that's met me, I usually give them a phrase, something along the lines of, we'll buy it and figure out how to pay for it. I've got a lot of equipment. I've got a lot of tools. I've invested a lot in the convenience factor and the efficiency, anything from an Encon tilt rotator to Unilift, from Unilock, other vacuum systems, other specialty tools. So, I guess my takeaway point should be, don't be afraid to spend that money on that tool or that piece of equipment and build it in your budget. I'm not saying do it recklessly. Obviously, we all have a business to run and we can only afford so much, but if you're doing it smart and thinking about it, if it's going to make the efficiency, if it's going to help retain employees, some guys get too stuck on that big number. Just, sign on the dotted line. Banks are almost giving away money for 0% now. I mean, if you can't make that back, I mean, it's more valuable in my pocket than for that. So just, be smart with your money, but don't be afraid to spend it to grow if you want.
Excellent, excellent advice. And how about people in the industry that you look up to, or even since beginning your business, people that have been mentors in your life, or even through the online community, designs that influence you and people that influence you? Do you want to give any shout outs to any of those people?
We got a lot of a lot of Instagram relationships, a lot of guys out there. I've got kind of a smaller core group that we talk to on a day-to-day basis. So, a quick shout out to those guys. Of course, we got Andy at he's gonna love me saying, but MMSSRIWRI, and don't edit that out because he'll love that. Jeremy from J Squared, Sean over at Premier Outdoor. It is a core group that we talk to. I got local guys over here, my buddy Fletcher at Aquidneck Landscaping, and Josh over at Mass Hardscapes. So, I mean, quick shout out to them, but most importantly, man, I mean, my wife and my parents, hands down. A quick little backstory. My biological father passed away when I was 7. My mother and my grandmother raised me. My mom being, I guess, a single mom for most of my more pain in the butt years, grandmother helping her. I mean, I gotta give it to her, man. She did an awesome job for what she had to do it with. She raised me to work hard. She had since married my stepfather now, helped kind of continue to instill that whole mentality of nothing's handed to you. You gotta work for it. And when the opportunity comes, it's up to you whether you take it and run with it or take it and drop it. So, I mean, my parents by far, and then of course my wife. So my wife and I met in high school, sophomore year, which is actually 1 year before I started doing any of this. And we've been together ever since. Married, just had a baby 4 months ago, 5 months ago.
Congratulations.
We lived together for, I don't know, 6, 7 years by now. And, I mean, I don't know. I lucked out, man. I really did. She's awesome. She's a rock. She never complained from high school to now about, you know, if I'm working late or, you know, hey, I can't go to that party because I got to wake up Saturday and go to work, you know, and that's, I'll be honest, that has to contribute to some of my success, it, being able to know that I have that. And she's just been super supportive on the, all the ups and downs, and, you know, she'll give me her 2 cents, but at the end of the day, you know, she respects everything I do. And I mean, she kicks some butt, and I respect everything she does for us.
That's a beautiful story. And, you know, being an entrepreneur, being a business owner, it's got its ups and downs, but when you have a like a stable family home, a rock at home, it definitely contributes to some sort of stability in your life. And obviously you found that with your wife and with your family now that you've created.
Absolutely. It's crucial.
And then wrapping this interview up, I've got one last question for you. And that's, you know, you've gone through a lot with your business, and you've gone through many different stages in your business, and you've more than likely learned numerous things that you've been able to apply to your business over the years. We've heard about a lot of different things that you've talked about, you know, from systems to budgeting and your numbers and all that throughout this interview. And I just want to ask you one thing that you wish you'd known from the very beginning of starting your business. One thing that you know now that you wish you'd known from the very start, what would that be?
You know, Mike, that's a loaded question. And you mentioned a few things there, and I'm glad I kind of got a few points across. And I really wanted to take this opportunity of this interview to kind of share my story and hope it resonates with others. You know, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, you know, you're the face. You know, at least when you get going, you're the first one to be in, you're the last one out, you're the first one to not get paid, you know, if you get paid at all that week. You know, there's so many things emotionally that, you know, I never really accounted for. I don't mind the hard work, the hustle, the grind, get in, get it done, work 7 days a week, do what it takes. But, you know, had someone sat me in a room and told me, hey, you're about to, you know, strap in, you're about to ride an emotional roller coaster. I think that's something that's just not often discussed. You know, yeah, we discuss the hardships and the horror stories and the stress of employees and all this, but, you know, downright, man, I mean, it's an emotional roller coaster. I don't mind admitting it. And, you know, I'd be the first to get it out there on air, so to speak. So guys can kind of talk to each other about it. You know, we can kind of open up a little bit about it, you know. You know, there's times where there's, you know, cash flow is stretched so thin, you're wondering how to make it to the next week, or, you know, you're catching up on the calendar and, you know, you're wondering if you're going to have enough work next week. And then the phone rings and then you're booked up for 2 months and you don't know how you're going to get it all done. Or, you know, you're watching one of your employees hit one of your trucks with one of your trucks in your parking lot. You know, the frustration of employees. We could share stories for days on that. You know, and but at the end of the day, it's your name, it's your reputation, it's your credit. You know, if you fail, you know, the guys can go down the road for a job. You know, what are you going to do? You know, that affects your entire life. And, you know, another point in that, you know, just, and I guess I'll close on these notes is, you know, social media is awesome. Instagram is awesome for marketing, for networking, everything in between. But, you know, just keep in mind, and this is really to the guys that are kind of just starting out or maybe struggling a couple of years in, you know, not everyone's as successful as their pictures are going to let on. Like, everybody's got a story behind there. And just think about that when you're kind of feeling down about it. And, we've all been through it and we're all going through it. And, that same colleague that shared that quote to me earlier recommended a book for me. And I'll start by saying I've read 5 books in my life. I hate reading. I'm not good at reading. I always, you know, kind of freaked out when the teacher called on me to read out loud. Like, it's just not my thing. But I picked this book up and I'm going to recommend it to everyone. And it's The E-Myth Revisited Version by Michael Gerber. And yeah, there's a bunch of, you know, business fluffy stuff in there that, you know, you can take with a grain of salt. But the absolute core values are in there, and there's so much that's relative to business owners. you know, and the biggest quote really is, you know, there's entrepreneurs and then there's technicians suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure. So, you know, the guy that's frustrated with his boss saying, oh, I can do this on my own. I'm just going to go start my own business, not realizing he's just going to go start his own business doing the same thing that he's doing now, putting more time into it because now he's got the whole business end to deal with, all to make less money. So, you know, there's kind of a place for everyone in that. And don't feel like you need to go and start your own business. You can have a super successful career doing everything that we discuss in all these interviews within an existing business, you know, being a manager or being a foreman. So, you know, a lot of stuff out there on social media is kind of pushing guys to do that. But just don't get caught up in the fact that you have to be on your own to do it. You can do it as part of a team. And that was just my last little point I wanted to get across.
Yeah, and I love that point that, you know, being a business owner, it really isn't for everybody. And being able to reflect on yourself and know what's right for yourself and understanding that maybe owning a business isn't for you because it's not for everybody, and understanding that you can be an amazing, you know, number two somewhere and make a living off that is so important. And I love that point because it's not addressed and it's not talked about in the online world for sure. And excellent way to close this interview. Garrett, thank you so much for joining us.
Mike, thank you so much.